Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Coach Ben Rosario Show. I am Coach Ben Rosario, and today I'm going to be speaking with a fellow coach. His name is Mike Scannell, and some of you may have heard of him, some of you may not have, but he is the coach of two-time Foot Locker National Champion Grant Fisher, as well as a number of other high school kids in the Michigan area. And he himself was a fantastic runner, is a fantastic runner, a master's runner. When I was living in Michigan running for the Hanson's Brooks team in the early to mid-2000s, Mike was on the circuit all the time, winning races, and basically kicking butt. He was a very well-respected member of the running community there. And then I met him personally, actually, a couple of years later at the U.S. Club Cross Country Championships when they were in San Francisco. And just one of those guys that just had an impact on me, you know, right away. We only spoke, you know, for a few minutes, but I heard him cheering for me during the race. And then I think we spoke again after. And just, I don't know, it just, he kind of stuck with me. And then all of a sudden, I see him showing up as Grant's coach many years later now, and just doing all the things that I kind of knew he was all about from the get-go, just building people up slowly, you know, just kind of taking what we know from running science and applying it kind of in a simple way, you know, and that's the kind of coaching I certainly like, and that's kind of my philosophy, I think. So it'll be fun to talk to Mike, talk some training, learn a little bit about what he's been doing with Grant and what the future holds this season for him, possibly sub-4 mile attempt, those sorts of things, and just get into the nitty-gritty of training. I think Mike is a guy that we can learn from because he does a great job, and, you know, to me, the best coaches in the world aren't always the professional coaches. I've said this before, but at the high school level, we have some of the very best coaches in the world, in the United States here, coaching at the high school level, because that's what they want to do. They want to have an impact on the lives of young people, and Mike has certainly done that with Grant and with the group he's coaching there. So I think it'll be neat to talk to him. I also want to ask him a little bit about the situation there and coaching Grant, but not being the official high school team coach. I know that can be sort of an issue. So we'll get to him in just a second. Let me pause here, and I'll get right back to you guys. All right, we're back there. Sorry about that little blip. That was my fault. I gave Mike the wrong call-in number, but he's calling back now and should be with us shortly. So, again, we're about to talk to Mike Scannell, coach of Grant Fisher, two-time Foot Locker National Champion. Mike's a great runner in his own right, he has a really cool philosophy on training, I think. I'm biased, but sort of similar to my training philosophy, and I think it'll be fun to kind of talk nuts and bolts with Mike over the next 45 minutes. So, without further ado, here we go, Mike Scannell.
Hey, good afternoon, Ben. How you doing today?
I'm good. Sorry I gave you the wrong number. What a goofball I am.
That happens. I'm glad that we got it all straightened out and that I could be on your show today.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. How was your vacation in Las Vegas?
It was great. I was actually out there with Grant for both vacation and training. As you probably know, or maybe don't know, or your listeners may not know, Grant's dad and I have been good friends for many, many years, and my daughter and Grant are just about best friends. So we have vacationed with them many, many times, and this was a working and a holiday type vacation for us. So it was great.
Very cool, very cool. Yeah, I've been to Vegas many times. Flagstaff's only 4 hours away, so I shoot over there now and again. Not a bad time of year to be there, especially coming from the Michigan winter.
Yeah, exactly. And we got to go out and run track workouts and hang out afterwards instead of just rushing to get back inside. And my daughter turned 18, so she got to jump from an airplane, and I went as well. And Grant had to watch because that's not an approved activity for an athlete that's going to be racing here soon.
Well, for me, it wouldn't be an approved activity, period. I could not do that. That's kudos to you guys. Very awesome. So tell me about the winter. How was it in Michigan?
We're fortunate here that we work out in a club that has a quarter-mile indoor track. So
Nice. We
can do tempo stuff, and we don't really do a whole lot of upbeat stuff, but we have that ability. And then, you know, we can't really run anything fast outside ever. So if it ever gets under 20 degrees, I really don't let the guys train outside because you can't really run. And it gets so icy that you're testing your health with your hamstrings slipping on ice. And so it was pretty dicey. And, it's just the way it is in Michigan. You have to be careful.
Has it started to come around for you guys now?
Yeah, there's no snow on the ground. So we haven't been outside in Michigan yet because the snow melted right when we were packing up to leave. But the snow is off the ground, so our first outdoor track workout will be tomorrow afternoon.
Unbelievable. Well, that's great. That's great. Yeah, and for people who, have not lived in Michigan, which I have, the saving grace is that you are about to hit a period that is beautiful. I mean, the spring, or the late spring and the summer certainly are just gorgeous in Michigan, so I'm sure you'll get some good training in here shortly.
Yeah, you're right about that. You get some really, really pleasant months of the year. It's about 6 to 7 months. It's just beautiful, long days and temperate conditions, and it's great for training.
Well, let's talk training a little bit. So, first of all, before we get to Grant and some of the other high school athletes you coach, give us just a little background on yourself. I remember you, obviously, from my days at Hanson's when you were tearing up the roads still in Michigan. But just catch us up on your own running career and kind of when you got started and kind of how much you're running these days.
Well, I ran at Arizona State with Grant's dad. We were actually roommates. So I was a distance runner in college. And then I ran on the roads a little bit. I made the Olympic trials a couple times and tried to obviously run well there. And then I put it on the back burner for many, many years. And then when I got to be about 40, I guess I was 38 or 39, somebody asked me to start racing again. And I had been retired for so many years, I thought they were crazy. And so I started running again, and I could still run under 15 for 5K. I could run in the 14:50s, 14:40s for 5K as a master's runner. And so I started racing as a master's runner, and I was not coaching. I live in a really small town, so a couple of the good high school runners started training with me because I was still running, I could run on 5-minute pace. And so we live in such a small town that every single Sunday we just met at my house to train. So we'd run 15 miles from my house every Sunday, and the high school kids would just come, and I didn't care who came. We'd get 20 kids here. Not kids, 20 people here. Basically, the whole running community would show up at my house on Sundays. So, And then, I don't know, it was about 7 years ago or 8 years ago when the high school coach approached me and asked me to coach. Basically, I had run this summer with a kid that wound up running and winning state for the high school here. And he trained with me all summer and then won state and cross country. And then the following year, that winter, so about 12 months later, the high school coach asked me if I would help out because he was the only guy at the school that was running. Basically, they didn't have a distance program at the school. And so I said, sure, and I met the team. They had one senior who had run 454 or 452 or something like that, and they had one junior, and that was it, and they had five freshmen. And so I said, yes, I started coaching those guys when they were freshmen. One of those freshmen was Omar Kadura, who set the state record and ran 403 in high school, or 347, won the Pan Am Games. But the juniors. Yeah, but I would say, it took me about 2 years with Omar and all those guys, actually. We went the very first year I coached, we had three on the podium at the conference meet, and they were all freshmen. Three of the top six were freshmen, and they were all from our the school that I coached. The junior and senior weren't players, they were doing other things. One was in drama and one was in, doing other stuff. One was actually on the swim team in the winter because he didn't want to train. So anyway, I took those five freshmen, and once I got them rolling, those five, and I really coached through Omar's senior year, And Omar ran and won the state meet a couple times, and I had another kid that won the state meet before that a couple times. So once I had that, then the kids from this area, and I do live in a small town, started coming, you know, for training advice, et cetera. And I was going to quit. I really was going to quit after Omar because it was such a lot. I have a normal job. I don't coach. And I told Dan that, you know, I was done, and Dan knew I was done. I wasn't taking on any younger kids, basically. I had, like, one junior, one sophomore. I wasn't really coaching any kids anymore. And he asked me to coach Grant because he didn't want Grant to be under, you know, he wanted Grant to have proper training. And so I said, okay, I'll coach Grant, but if I coach Grant, then I got to take another group on. So I did. I took another group on. So right now I've got, I don't know, like probably 9 or 10 kids. And they've done really well. We went 1-2 in the state in the mile just a couple weeks ago in the indoor mile. And we went 1-4 with two different kids in the 2 mile. And so, you know, it's been a wonderful experience. I know everybody wants to know what Grant Fisher does, but honestly, you know, I train each one of my kids a little bit differently. A lot of them do a lot of aerobic stuff, but the bottom line is, every kid is different, and Grant has had wild success, which is great. But, you know, my success stories have nothing to do with Grant Fisher. I mean, my success stories start with a kid that weighs 165 pounds, and then 4 years later, he's going off to college to run for a university. That's a success story. Grant's parents both ran in college, you know, so making Grant pass is great. It's great. It's great, but the true success stories are kids that, you know, they had no opportunity to get in the right school, and they ran, you know, 5:45 for the mile in eighth grade. And then you get that kid to run in college. That's a success story. Grant was, you know, when I got Grant, he was running, I don't know, he couldn't break 5 minutes for a mile, that's for sure. So it's not like that the training hasn't worked for him as well, but you know, I love it when I can take a kid and that I can train and develop goals with him and talk about vision and talk about the future, and then watch that kid's self-esteem grow and watch the doors open for that kid. That is just, it's an amazing and rewarding process for me. And I am not a high school coach. You know, I have a full-time job, and these kids have to come to practice at 5:30 in the morning and 8 o'clock in the morning on Saturdays. And if they want to train with me, I don't ask anyone to train with me. It's just, that's the way it goes. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt about that. And, you know, I think in particular in the sport of running, distance running, those self-esteem things that you talk about and the kind of the formation of a young person over the course of those 4 years in high school is, or at least it can be so much more powerful in our sport just because it's so tangible. You know, like you said, they start at 5:45 and they end at 4:30 or whatever it might be. And in other sports, you just don't always get that. Plus, you don't always get the you just don't get the opportunity to do things yourself, you know, in some of the team sports. And so, you know, in this sport, you know, you can't blame anybody but yourself. And I think there's something that, you know, creates some toughness there in our sport.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I sit down with the kids day one and set goals, and they may be just to run every day. That may be their goal. But if you achieve that goal and then you stepwise increase the goal and keep doing it, those kids, boys thrive on challenges. And so it's an amazing thing. It's honestly, it's very, very rewarding to see that these boys, and they are boys, what they can do as they turn into men and go off to college. It's wild. So I really enjoy that part of the process.
For sure. And it is fun to see them succeed and send them off and feel like you know, had a small part in their lives and made a positive impact. And, you know, it's certainly cool. I'm part of this podcast series that I'm doing now is with high school coaches because I'm co-writing a book with my high school coach who had an amazing impact on my life. And we're kind of putting out a book that sort of encompasses everything you're talking about and why high school cross country is so so powerful and kind of how to build a big program. But let's get down to a little more training stuff here and philosophical stuff when it comes to training. And I guess in particular, you know, obviously people do want to know about Grant and they do want to know, you know, what he's doing. I've certainly, over the last couple of years, read some of the interviews you've done, and I got to watch Grant run in person at Foot Locker each of the last 2 years. And I've seen all the things about, you know, you not pushing him too early, letting him play soccer, thinking long term. Just talk a little bit about the philosophy and maybe when you kind of started to realize that, hey, you know, Grant's going to be real good, so I have a real big responsibility here.
Well, just in general, first of all, before we talk about Grant, my general philosophy is on training a high school boy or any adolescent is that we go from a very aerobic position, always aerobic. My freshmen don't even do quarters. They don't even do quarters. You don't get to go around the track as fast as you can, even once, all year long.
Yeah.
So I start with a lot of tempos. My guys, yep. Grant Fisher, has run 200 tempo runs. I mean, it just tons and tons. And you have no idea how often we do that. We do a ton of tempo runs. He does one every single week all year long. Guaranteed one. Sometimes more. Sometimes three. But anyway, we start with a very aerobic type training. And then as they age, the next thing I do is we do longer intervals and strength. We do hills. And my freshmen can do hills, but we don't run anything. We don't do any 200s. There is no 30-second 200 for a freshman ever for me. Never. Never.
Got it.
And so it's very gentle. And then especially as they age, and really when they get to be sophomores or juniors, and you can just look at them and say, that kid is starting to get testosterone in the system.
Yep.
And that's the point that with Grant and with other athletes, I add more strength, and then I will begin to do shorter intervals. And no matter what, even to this day, my shorter intervals, I don't let the kids run faster than their current mile pace, basically. So if you're a 420 miler, the fastest you get to run in practice is 65. And if you run 64, I will tell you that's your fastest one or your last one. You get to choose. Either that's your fastest one or it's going to be your last one. That's all there is to it. So I am very general, an underdoer coach. I know everybody wants to know what Grant does. He runs 50 miles a week. He might run 52. The highest he's ever been is probably 55. And that's Grant Fisher. And I've got kids that run 65, but they're different animals. So you kind of look at each animal differently, and I train that guy the way it goes. And so it's aerobic his first year. Second year I do, well, summer for sure, hills and strength work, which long intervals to me are about 3 minutes long with a two-minute break. And those are tempered as well. So those I do no faster. I didn't say no faster than their current 5K pace. So if they're an 18-minute 5K runner, that's 550 per mile. 550 per mile, somewhere around 335 for a 1,000, and we do a lot of thousands. So 335 for a 1,000, and then we'll repeat that a lot. So it's not really hard and really easy. It's kind of tempered, kind of like a rolly hill kind of strategy. And I go hard, easy, hard, easy, hard, easy all the time. I don't ever go hard, 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 or it's always hard, easy. My strategy is always hard, easy with all of these kids. And I want them to be snappy. I talk about that all the time in practice. I want their legs to be snappy. And then once Grant got to be about a sophomore, we strategized to win the state meet. And his dad didn't believe me. And and it was indoor state. And, well, because his dad was, you know, the returning state champion was in the mile. And his dad just couldn't – his dad lets me coach Grant 100%. He doesn't get involved in it, honestly. So when I told – and I initially told him race strategies, and we lay out a race strategy for every single time the gun goes off. There isn't even a dual meet that we don't have a job to do. And when I started telling his dad, Dan, of our race strategies, and especially when I told him what we were going to do at the state meet, because we went early because he was an air athlete at the time as a sophomore, remember? Air aerobic training. That was our training. So he went with 600 to go against the state champion. And I told him, with 600 to go, you're going to go. And Grant is really very mentally strong. And he took off, and he started pushing the pace, and the state champ let him go. And it was only about 5 meters or 6 meters where he let him go. But you know what? Grant ran to the finish line and won the state indoor meet. And when I saw his head in that race, not his body, when I saw his head and what his head could do, where his head could take him, I knew, hold on to your hat, because this is going to get ugly quick, because that kid, he can hear me in races now, but for a couple of years, we would set up what I call a movie. This is how this race is going to go. We'd set it all up. We'd talk about it step by step. And even in our training, we would say, okay, if we were going to run, and I'll throw out times, which is just Grant related, but if we're going to run, and we did this last year, we're going to run 60, 65, 65, 60 in a mile. 60, you know, those are your quarter splits. We would do a workout where we're going to do 60-second pace, and then the second part of the workout, 65. The third part of the workout, 65, and then we would close. Like if we're doing 300s, we do them in 45, which is 60 seconds a quarter. So during that workout, he gets to visualize what's going to happen in the race, how he's going to feel, how he's going to feel more relaxed at 65 than 60. And then, boom, the gun would go off. And honestly, I could be standing 4 feet from him and he wouldn't hear a word I said. So we would just play the movie, and then he would execute the movie, and that would be great. But now he's at a point that he can actually hear me here and there. Like at New Balance Indoor, you know, it was, we had never employed a strategy like that before. And we employed a strategy to go from the gun. Obviously, I don't know if you saw that race, but typically...
I didn't see that one.
Okay, well, Grant normally runs to win any championship race. But at New Balance Indoor this year, for the first time, the gun went off and he led start to finish. And that was the strategy. But that included me giving him splits to let him know, how are we doing? You know, what are our expected splits, et cetera. And he told me, after the race, I said, did you hear me? And he said, yeah, I heard everyone. So that was good, because a year ago, I would have said, did you hear me? And he would have said, what? So anyway,
well,
Grant is at a point now that we'll let him do some speed work. Last year, he only ran 4 quarters in the year faster than mile pace. He ran 2 quarters before the Adidas race faster than mile pace. And I only let him run up to 10% faster than mile pace. So if you can run a 420 mile, that's 65, I will let you run a hard quarter up to 59 or 60. That's a very, very hard quarter. He did two of those last year in one workout and two of those in another workout. That was his really hard speed work for the year. And that's it.
Yeah.
And I'm planning on changing that this year. And people are – I know people across the country are just mortified that I'm going to – allow him to run a different schedule than he did last year, but he's a different athlete than he was last year. So we have to adjust. With his growth, we adjust the training.
Well, I know that, you know, a lot of coaches listen to this and sometimes send me emails and questions after. And so, you know, I can tell you right now that what I hope they're taking from this, if they're listening, is that it sounds to me like you are making 100% sure that these guys are super good at running fast and relaxed. And you can't learn to run fast and relaxed running super hard 200s or super hard, you know, that are way beyond your race pace or way under your race pace. That's when you get bad habits. What you can do when you're running tempo run after tempo run after tempo run and strong controlled thousands is you can teach that fast and relaxed feeling, and that's how you get control of your body. And, you know, as you know from as an athlete, when you have that ability to be under control at a fast pace, oh, you're very dangerous.
That was such an eloquent way of putting that description of training, because it's spot on. Anytime a kid goes to the well or runs too hard, I'm famous for saying 1% less, 2% less. You know, this next interval, 2% less, because we don't run to the point that we're holding our knees after an interval. I don't want to ever see that. And, you know, I know there's a lot of coaches that probably listen to this, and I have the benefit of owning and employing a lactate analyzer, and high school kids are horrible at telling you when they're running too hard. So I take a lot of blood. I mean, I blood test my guys often. But honestly, once you just see what an accurate and proper tempo is, you know that you can run through. I call it running through a workout. can you go one more mile at this tempo pace? If the kid says yes, then perfect, stop right now. That's the way it goes. If the kid can't go another mile at the pace, I'm telling you right now, it's way too hard. Way too hard. Run relaxed, run through it, and be happy and come back tomorrow and say that was too easy. If you say it's too easy for me, I'm excited as can be. Because I'm a guy that taps the system often. I just don't tap it hard. And I know that, I hear stories of interval day after interval day after interval day, and it's just not my philosophy. You know, and I know there's coaches that get great success with that, but I just don't do that. And not with any of them, not with any of my guys. None of my guys have that.
Yeah. Go ahead. If you got a story, go ahead, share it.
Well, no, I was going to just say that I have a kid that was second in the mile just a few weeks ago, you know, like a month ago. Second in the mile in the state. And he's a completely different animal than Grant Fisher is. They don't have the same schedule. They don't even train together. And it's because he comes from a very fast program before I got to him. And aerobically, he is not trained like Grant. And people always say, oh, Grant is so fast. But the reality is, Grant isn't that fast. He's just not tired when he starts running fast. He's not tired at all. I mean, people think, oh, you know, he has this great kick. No, he doesn't. He does not. I have athletes that run with him that are faster than he is. But he's not tired at 3 minutes in a mile. I mean, and so then he starts running and people think, wow, what a kick. No. He's not tired. He's aerobically trained.
Very good. Very good. So this is another thing I've noticed about what you guys have done there, and certainly Grant is the example, but it seemed like in cross country, and I think I read this in a couple interviews, but I mean, just with the naked eye, just watching the race, you could tell that Grant was prepared at Foot Locker Nationals for the course. And I just wanted to pick your brain about how important that is to you in the cross country season, preparing specifically for a course.
Oh, you know, it's not only cross country, but track as well. We prepare for every single race. And specifically, you know, if you want to bring up Foot Locker, we went out there last year, 2 years ago, whatever, junior. We were not prepared, I have to admit. I knew there was a hill. I knew that we were going to do hills. We got out there. We ran the course. We developed the strategy there, and it worked. But you know what? Honestly, Grant won that race last year on guts and we did talk about winning. There's no doubt about it. We talk about stuff before we get there. There's no doubt. There was a line in the grass, and I said, Grant, I don't care if you're sweating blood. When you get to this, you know, in Foot Locker painted all that, those stars all over the place. So I just said, you see this grouping of stars, Grant? I don't care what happens. If you're not winning, you hammer from here to there. And it was about 50 yards out, and you know, we used that as a junior, but then we used going out there and that experience then, you know, in our training, and we picked out trees. We had a hill. We did certain hills that were exactly what was going to happen strategy-wise at Foot Locker. Exactly what we were going to do at Foot Locker, we repeated 50 times in practice. 50. Yeah. There was no chance what we were going to do. And then the gun went off, and we even had a strategy for the first mile of the race. You know, if you watch that race, I told them, somebody's going to go out hard. I don't want you anywhere near that guy. Everyone's going to watch you, but let that guy sit out there on his own. And I didn't know who it would be, but I knew somebody would be out there. And we didn't want to worry about him late in the race, so I just said, Grant, I don't want you anywhere near him. I said, the closest you can get to him, at the mile, you can close. Now go back and watch the video, and within 20 yards after the mile, he goes from 10 yards back to on his bike. And I just started laughing. And you could just see that he was...
He took it literally.
So, but then race strategy-wise at Foot Locker, we planned for a harder 2 mile. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, he waited to go when we had planned to go, and there was a tree. I'm in the video up by the tree. Exactly where the crux of our race plan was. You know, I want to watch. I want to make sure we execute. And he executed fine, and they're really – we were very, very well prepared to run hard, very hard at Foot Locker. And I was a little bit surprised that he didn't have to run as hard as we expected him to run, that's for sure. So, but you know, the real question is, how do you prepare? Do you think it's important to prepare? I'm big on running the course in advance, certainly a month in advance, and then picking out certain landmarks. And I'm big on trees. I'm big on turns. I'm big on either mud or, you know, something that goes on the course, and developing our strategy on how to win based on what that course is going to present. And, you know, once you race a couple times in cross country, you know how the rhythm of the race is going to go. Do I need to run hard here to get rid of the group? Do I need to push here? Do I need to relax here? And certainly, you know, we pick out, like at Foot Locker Midwest, we ran that course, you know, a couple times, and there were spots on the course that you will be in the left side of the entire course right now because it's the hardest ground. It's not, yep. We don't like to run through mud. We don't like to run through ice because we don't know how deep it is. We don't run through standing water ever. So, you know, we pick out slots on the course where we're going to be in this, you know, 200-yard section. Are we going to be left here? Are we going to be right here? You know, where are we going to be? And so we do that very, very often. There's no – I never let a kid go to the line without an outcome in his head. There's no doubt about it. What you get out is what you put in. And if you're going to a line and just saying, I hope I run well, I'm telling you, all my guys are going to beat you that day. You need to go to that line with an idea of what you want out of today before that gun goes off. And I don't want any decisions made. Most race decisions are bad decisions. So we make those decisions in advance. It's true. You know it. I've made them. You've made them.
Oh, yeah.
When you make those decisions in the race, you do nothing but compromise your goal, in my opinion. So we absolutely, for sure.
And you have to be prepared to understand that those decisions are going to be there, and you have to already know your answer. You know, and because they're going to come, and especially the ones that have to do with hurting, you know, because at some point the race is going to hurt, and you have to be prepared to say, yes, I'm going to go. Yes, I'm going to go with this move. Yes, I'm going to go with the pace I set out to do, all those sorts of things. And I think it's important, you know, again, for people listening to hear you say that, and how specifically you get ready for a course, or you know, as you've mentioned, how specifically you get ready for a particular track meet. And the only way to do that is to do those sorts of things in practice. And again, that's why doing a lot of race pace work, not necessarily sub race pace work, feeling comfortable at the rhythm at which you're going to race is super important. And obviously you put a bigger importance on it than the sub-race pace stuff, which some people put, you know, a lot of importance on, but maybe it doesn't always work out the way they'd like. Talk about track a little bit, since we're in the thick of track season and people listening are probably in the thick of their track season. We talked a little bit about the mile. Talk a little bit about the 3200, the 2 mile, and how you prepare athletes for that particular event.
Well, all of my guys, point blank, do tempo work. And so the longer guys, we do tempo work, and I'll give this formula out to all your coaches listening out there and your athletes, because I use it, but I also take lactate often. But the bottom line is we take current 5K pace, not what you think you're going to run, not what your goal is. What is your fitness today? We take current 5K pace divided by 0.93, and that becomes your tempo pace. So somebody that can run a 15:30 for 5K, that's 5 minute pace. Their tempo pace is about 5:35. Got it? 5:35. So 300 seconds divided by 0.93, you get about 35 seconds. 5:35 pace. My 2 mile guys will go up to 5 miles at that pace. So Grant, for example, most times, well, Grant's a little bit different. Let's take a different miler. My miler that was second in the state, he goes 3 miles and sometimes 4 miles at that pace. My 2 mile guys will go 4 miles or 5 miles at that pace. So they're geared even more toward the aerobic side of things. And I do a different kind of workout, which I call a strength workout, which I'm sure you've heard of, is kind of like in and out 200s.
Yep.
I'm big on strength work. So like this weekend we did a strength workout, and everybody but Grant in this case. But we ran 32-42. So in particular with this miler. He ran 32 for a 200 and 42 for a 200 and 32 for a 200, and he's run 415. So, I mean, he ran 415 a couple weeks ago. So his current fitness is about probably a little bit faster than that. But we ran 32, 42, 32, 42, and we did that for a mile. We take a break,
yep.
We come back and do it again, take a break, come back and do it again. So we do, and that is a very typical workout for my distance runners, my longer guys, my two-mile guys. But everybody does long intervals, point blank, everybody. My two-mile, my 3,200-meter guys will do more strength stuff, which is an in-and-out run, like I just told you, and they do
yep.
longer tempos. Other than that, you know, my highest mileage kid right now, I think, is at 60 miles a week, and I don't have anybody higher than that. And I don't believe in a bunch of mileage until you can run it with snappy legs. So I don't,
yep.
you know, I don't run a kid at 70, 80, 90 miles because they don't have anything better to do. If you're completing 40 miles a week and you're okay and you get through workouts and you're not too fatigued, I'll let you run 45. But I don't say you're a junior now, you're running 60. You're a senior now, you're running 70 or whatever, an 80. I've never had a kid run 80, so it doesn't matter. But Omar Kadura, who ran and won the state meet a couple times, I think he won indoor twice and won outdoor twice, his biggest mileage week ever in high school, I think 52 miles. And
yeah.
his typical week was 45. And he was a speed demon. He could run 47 point or 48 point in a quarter. And even at that, he was a tempo guy and he rarely ran faster than mile pace in practice. But if he ran the mile relay, I told him, go ahead and run as hard as you can. I don't care at all.
Yeah.
But Grant doesn't do the mile relay. Grant, he's never run a mile relay at his school, ever. So
yeah. Well, let me ask this question because, you know, a lot of coaches or there's a lot of bitterness sometimes in running, which is kind of strange. There's also more nice people. But, you know, sometimes when a high school coach or somebody is having a ton of success with athletes, they want to always find a way to knock them down and they want to say, oh, well, they're working too hard and they're not going to be good. These kids aren't going to be anything in college or whatever else. But I think what you're describing is a very responsible way to get these kids ready for the collegiate ranks. And so maybe talk a little bit about how much, if at all, that enters your mind, and certainly maybe some of the success stories that some of your athletes have had in college.
Well, when I sit down with parents, they expect me to say that I'll make their kid fast. And that is not my goal, ever. My goal is always to get your kid into the best university he can get in. And if he can use his legs to get there, better, good on you. So my number one goal, and I make kids set, my rules, here are my rules. I'll tell you what my rules of coaching are. My rules of coaching are, number one, you're going to come to practice because I'm not going to waste your time or my time because I don't have any of it. So number one, you're going to come to practice. Number two, you're going to keep a daily training log. I want to know what we did yesterday. I want to know how it felt. I want to know how it went. So when we look back, if we make a mistake, we can learn from it. So you're going to keep a daily training log. Number three, you're going to set and write down goals in your log. So we write goals for home, school, and athletics. And we have academic goals. And so for my guys, my rule is we prepare kids for ACT tests. We prepare kids. Almost all my kids are 4.0 students. And distance runners are smart anyway. So. But
sure.
I make kids set goals so that they can get in college. Now, as far as running goes, obviously I have a more tempered attitude toward where these guys are going. But, I mean, I've got a kid going to Villanova this year. I got a kid, Grant's going to Stanford. I got a kid going to Villanova this year. I got another kid going to Marshall and another kid going to Saginaw Valley. And all of those kids signed. Those are all kids that got into college and will sign. Will they all be kids that you've heard of? Absolutely not. But I can tell you, one of those kids, neither parent went to college. Now, for him to go to college and be the first one in the family to go to college, for me, that's true coaching success. You've never heard of this kid before in your life. He's run 4:28 in the mile. You're probably never going to hear of him in your life. But to me, that's a huge success story for me that I got that kid into school. He's going to go, and he hopefully will be a solid member of his team, but more importantly, will get a college degree. Now, there are other kids that you have. I've got a kid at Montana State. I've sent kids to, I've sent kids all over the place, actually. But but really, their success in college, for me, has more to do with their brain than their legs. Now, you know, Grant, you know, I know that he has a very bright future in college, but I'm living in a really small town, and my success, and personally, is judged on whether or not I get him into college and get him into a right school, and if they enjoy the experience of running for a university, all the better. And I've sent kids to Michigan State. I had a state champion that went to Michigan State. He ran well in college. He ran 14:03, I think, or 14:02 as a freshman. And things like that, for me, of course, I still have contact with those kids all the time. But I've got I also have dentists. I've got two kids in dental school. I got one kid in medical school. And those kids, you know, like Omar's in medical school. That's it. For me, that's a huge success story. Now, did he ever win the NCAA? No. But he went to Georgetown on a full ride. That's huge. So,
absolutely.
So for me, I kind of judge that. I judge personal success rather than athletic success. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Well, that's fantastic. I feel like, you know, I had a number of topics that I wanted to cover, and we've done a great job. I feel like you've covered most of them. The only thing I can think that maybe I didn't touch on, and I think because the folks listening are probably just dying to hear everything you've got to say, because everything you've said so far has been great. Talk a little bit about racing schedule. So you've talked about how you train, you know, all the tempo runs, the hard and easy, but you've also mentioned, and in Grant's case, obviously running Foot Locker, running indoors, and now he's in outdoors, and the whole group is doing that. So how do you break up that racing schedule?
Well, every kid has a different schedule, but the thing, I do this twice a year. I sit down with their parents, I sit down with the kid, and I talk directly to the kid, and I ask them, what are your goals? And if that kid says his goal is to run at the state meet, which I had a kid say that to me for indoor, my goal is to run at the state meet. That is his peak then. You know, the qualifier for state has to be his peak, and state is usually just a couple days later. I back that up by about 6 weeks before we do anything at mile pace. So only in the last 6 weeks of a season will I allow a kid to do something other than strength and hills and tempo stuff. 6 weeks out before the most important race, we start with track work, which is up to mile pace. So the way we do it is, the way I do it is, like for Grant, for example, you know his most important races are in June right now. So I told you earlier today, we haven't been on the track. So it doesn't, yeah. I mean, he hasn't even done a track workout. And I have other kids that have been on the track for 2 or 3 weeks now, because they're going to end their seasons probably in 4 to 5 weeks. Our state meet is May 30th, and I live in a small town, so not all my kids are going to go to the state meet, but hopefully they will. But, you know, that's only 6 weeks away if they go to the state meet. But really, regionals is the 15th of May, so I got kids that are already doing track work. So we back it up by 6 weeks, and then I basically take blocks. I try and get a base month in, which is only longer runs, and we go up to 12 miles, and we finish those fast. Like even my kids that are running I have some kids that are running like 4:40 for the mile. They'll run up to 6 minute pace on a long run the last couple of miles. So we do that, and then we do tempo stuff, and I try and get a month of that in before we start even the hills and the strength stuff. Then the strength and the hills, I try and get 8 VO2 max sessions in a session. 8 VO2 max sessions per training cycle, and we do 2 major training cycles a year. This is one of them. And as I back up from the most important race, I think to myself, what are we going to do as far as workouts go? And we really don't do much that is under about a minute long. And then I'll back that up 4 weeks for the faster stuff up to mile pace. And then the middle block, I do a lot of VO2 max workout, which is that long interval thing I talked to you about before. I try and get 8 of those in. I also try and get 8 hill workouts in. And then the block before that is all basically aerobic and tempo. Did I answer that appropriately.
You did. You did. That was great. And then you tried to honestly, that was even better than I was asking for. And then the tack on to that would be, how often do you have them race?
Well, even when we race, first of all, I tell kids, you're going to get to race six times. Pick six. So I know that there's 12 races this season, but we're not going to 12 races. We're picking six. And I can tell you that sometimes it's only four or five or six. But the bottom line is I want six at the most important races. After that, we work on parts of the puzzle. So, for example, I've got a kid racing tomorrow, and he's going to race an 800. He's running 45 seconds hard. He's not running the full 800. He's going to run 45 seconds hard, or hopefully 42 seconds, because with 300 to go, he's going to close hard. That's the whole thing. That's a piece of the puzzle. So we're working on the last piece of the race, and then he's going to run an open 800 as well. We might work on the first piece of the puzzle. So a kid might run 12 races, but in those other ones that aren't important, let's say not state, not, you know, dual racer, dual meet or something like that, we will take a slice of the puzzle and only work on a snippet. We'll work on going out hard. We'll work on closing, or we'll work on something else. If I need him to work on something mental, maybe I'll tell him, I want you in this position. I want you in third. I want you third to fifth. I talk positions a lot when we talk about racing. Third to fifth. Mm-hmm. I want you to move up to the shoulder with that lap to go. I want you, you know, we call that striking position. I want you in striking position with the lap to go. I want you in striking position with the 600 to go. But the bottom line is we work on different pieces, and we don't look at a full 1600 until we get to the real races. And there's not that many of them. I don't like to let the kids run down to the well more than six times in a season. Six. And so
perfect.
In Grant's case,
okay,
the first time he will run hard, the first time he will run hard will be very close to the state meet. Now, this year might be a little bit different, and unfortunately, every time we disclose what we're going to do and what races we're going to do, it all gets posted on the internet, so I can't really say all that stuff. But the bottom line is last year, let's talk about last year. Last year, the first hard race he ran was his state meet, and we went state, but the real races were Adidas, Brooks, and Juniors, right? And so those were the real hard races, and we didn't really race hard until then because we expected to go on to Worlds, and he did, but we didn't expect him to stay 10 days at the ESPY Awards. But anyway, it doesn't matter.
Well, no, that totally answers that question. And I'll follow up with a question that I hadn't necessarily put on your little list of questions beforehand, but it just popped into my head. Since you've pretty much gone over the entire training philosophy and schedule, I'll ask this. How about ancillary work, plyos, drills, weights, anything like that?
Oh, boy, I'm a big plyo guy. I'm really into dynamic movement of the body. So we don't lift weights, but we do plyometrics. And the boys hate them. But you know what? I'm really into the whole body working together. Boys are uncoordinated. I mean, I get my freshmen to do plyos, and I'll just stop them and say, no, you're not even close to ready. You can't even do a plyometric.
Yeah.
You're not strong enough. And even if you do it, your body is not going to regenerate muscle growth because you've got no testosterone. So no plyos for you. But we do plyometrics twice a week, and we do core activities and plyos, absolutely, and we do them ad nauseum. Those are about as routine as tempo work for me, as long as the body is old enough. So certainly some kids sophomore year, freshmen, no, but certainly everybody junior year most likely, pretty much everybody junior year, and every single senior, plyometrics. And I do I do single leg hops. I do everything dynamic. So there's jumping, there's bounding, there's single leg hops. I don't do static lunges. I don't do stairs. I don't do, slow movement. I do dynamic movement. I like that part of plyometrics, so that's what we do. And
Mike, I'm on my way to go watch my athletes do those same things right now after we get done with this podcast.
Yeah, so it was great. You've had a lot of great questions. I don't know if I've answered them all or created more questions by being on your show with you, but it's been fun.
No, well, you were great, Mike. I really appreciate it, and I'm sure everybody that listens to this will take a lot of little pointers from what you had to say. And I certainly wish you the best of luck this year with Grant and with the whole squad, and we'll be watching.
Great. It sounds good. I will see you a different day. Thanks a lot for having me on the show.
All right. Thanks a lot, Mike. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
All right, folks, that was Mike Scannell, coach of Graham Fisher, two-time Foot Locker National Champion, and obviously, as you heard, accomplished Masters runner and accomplished runner in his own right. I have to say, guys, if you're listening and if you just listened, that was phenomenal. Mike went through the entire training philosophy that he has that has worked so well for his athletes, and, you know, I'm biased because I kind of share his philosophy, but man, if you're listening to this and you're a high school coach, I really hope you take a lot of what Mike said and apply it to your own program, because it takes a lot of patience to do what Mike does and to focus so much on the tempo running and the aerobic side of things and to resist the temptation to do those big-time sub-race pace workouts that you maybe remember from back in your day or whatever it might have been. But, man, it works, though. It works. And it's worked for Mike quite well, and it's working for his protege there, Grant Fisher, who's heading to Stanford next year. And we wish Grant all the best and just thank Mike for coming on once again. And keep listening to the show. I'll try to get some more new coaches for you soon. That was Mike Scannell. This is the Coach Ben Rosario Show, and we'll see you next time.